Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, killing in the name of God is satanic. The words of Pope Francis at Mass for an aged priest slain by extremists in France. In times of trouble and despair, rely on God. The Pope's message to pilgrims at the General Audience, September 14th. The Pope in Assisi, marking the 30th anniversary of the first interfaith summit for prayers for peace. We talk to the bishop of the Italian hill town and look back at how it all began. And a convent responds to Pope Francis's call to open its doors to refugees in Germany. Part of a chain of Christian martyrs running through church history. That's how Pope Francis described 85-year-old Father Jacques Hamel at a Mass in his honor at Santa Marta, September 14th. The French priest from Rouen was murdered in July while celebrating Mass in his parish church by two men swearing allegiance to the so-called Islamic State. Linda Bordoni tells us more.
To the congregation, which included Archbishop Dominique Lebrun of Rouen, along with 80 other pilgrims from the diocese, Pope Francis said that to kill in the name of God is satanic.
Uccidere in nome di Dio è satanico.
Reflecting on the many martyrs that are part of the history of the Catholic Church, the Pope said this is a story that repeats itself in the Church. And today, he continued, there are more Christian martyrs than there were at the beginning of Christianity. Today, he reiterated, there are Christians who are murdered, tortured, imprisoned, have their throats slit because they do not deny Jesus Christ.
In questa storia arriviamo al nostro Persac. Lui fa parte di questa catena di martiri.
This history, the Pope said, continues with our Father Jacques. He is part of this chain of martyrs. On the altar, a simple photograph of Father Hamel, who was slain by two Islamist fanatics while celebrating Mass in the church of Saint-Étienne du Rouvray on July the 26th. The liturgy was broadcast live by the Vatican television station. I'm Linda Bordoni.
Later that Wednesday, at the weekly general audience in St. Peter's Square, Pope Francis told the faithful not to be afraid in times of discouragement, poverty, or difficulty, because we can rely on God, and He will provide solace. Christopher Wells brings us this report.
The Pope was speaking to pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square for the weekly general audience. Reflecting on the Gospel passage by St. Matthew, in which Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest." Pope Francis said, "Even today we hear the Lord calling the discouraged, the poor, and the little ones to Himself, and telling them they can always rely on God."
Gli promette che in Lui troveranno riposo.
And he invited all believers, especially those who feel most powerless, to trust in God's mercy, to open their hearts to Him, even if they feel unworthy, and they will be filled with the joy of forgiveness. The Pope referred again and again to the Holy Year of Mercy and said pilgrims around the world have been crossing the threshold of a holy door of mercy, be it in a hospital, in a prison, or anywhere else, in search of conversion, of friendship with Jesus, of the comfort that only He can provide. Pope Francis expressed his disapproval for those pastors of the Church who become princes, who distance themselves from their people and from the poor.
È brutto per la Chiesa quando I pastori diventano principi.
That, the Pope said, is not the spirit of Jesus.
Quello non è lo spirito di Gesù.
The Holy Father pointed out that in approaching the Lord's inexhaustible mercy, we will discover His easy yoke. Jesus, he said, who bears the burdens and needs of humanity, shows us the way to salvation. By participating in His sufferings and by learning from His service to the poor, we come to know the will of God for us. And so Pope Francis concluded, when we are tired or despondent, let us not be afraid. Let us come to Christ, trust in Him, rest in Him, and to joyfully serve Him. I'm Christopher Wells.
Tuesday, September 20th, Pope Francis in Assisi again, this time for the Summit of Interfaith Leaders United in Prayers for Peace. This year's event, organized by the Sant'Egidio community, called Thirst for Peace, Religions and Cultures in Dialogue, bringing together more than 450 religious leaders of different faiths in the spirit of Assisi, the birthplace of St. Francis. Among those at this year's meeting, the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, members of other Christian denominations, and Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, and Zoroastrian leaders, and many more. The first World Day of Prayer for Peace of Assisi was called by Pope St. John Paul II in October 1986, the first time such an event had ever occurred. Religious leaders, including the Dalai Lama and the Archbishop of Canterbury, joined with the Pope to call for peace, unity, and interreligious understanding. Linda Bordoni has more.
This year's event marks the 30th anniversary of the first World Day of Prayer for Peace of Assisi, held by Pope St. John Paul II, who closed the meeting with the call, "Let's keep spreading the message of peace and living the spirit of Assisi." Since then, the community of Sant'Egidio has sought to fulfill that message by convening an annual meeting of religious leaders to discuss critical global issues of peace, unity, and interreligious dialogue. As the Bishop of Assisi, Domenico Sorrentino, explained to me, the event takes place in a historic moment for peace building as we witness so many situations of war, terrorism, and widespread violence.
It's a great occasion to bring people together, bring the believers of all religions in this moment where the world is facing a big crisis, as we see every day, big crisis of globalization, big crisis also of wars, fought in pieces, like the Holy Father used to say. And this occasion of grace, because we are together not only to reflect, this is important, but also to pray, each one according his own tradition, but we want to reaffirm the importance of the faith, the importance of prayer, the importance of the grace of God, if we want really build a new world according the values of God and the true humanity, a world of peace.
What is your diocese doing for this event?
Of course, Assisi has a great responsibility. as the city of St. Francis, a saint loved all over the world, we know that we must be in his footsteps, footsteps of the gospel, because Francis is Jesus, is the gospel put into life, and also the way of St. Francis to welcome all people, all kind of people, giving the testimony of a Christianism which has a great solidity of faith, but also the capacity to open the arms to everybody.
Pope Francis is back to Assisi. He's been there recently. What is his relationship with your beautiful city?
It's a great joy for us. Of course, Pope Francis, who chose the name of St. Francis, feels himself at home when he comes to Assisi.
And in this occasion, on the footsteps of Pope St. John Paul II, of course.
Of course, of course. 30 years ago, St. John Paul II had an intuition which was really a prophecy. And like also Pope Benedict, Pope Francis comes to be in the footsteps of this prophecy.
Bishop Domenico Sorrentino from Assisi, speaking there to Linda Bordoni. And now, Chris Altieri, Vatican Radio's correspondent for Pope Francis's visit to Assisi, shares insight into John Paul II's prophetic vision in calling that first World Day of Prayer for Peace back in 1986.
It was a time of particular tension on the world stage, and Pope John Paul II wanted to give a sign of the ongoing role of religion in public life, in world affairs, in human endeavor and in the human experience, at a time when there was a belief current still governing a good portion of the globe, according to which the religious drive in man was something that could and ought to be extinguished. And he also understood the need to give some sort of expression to an idea of legitimate plurality. But that was the founding vision. And through these 30 years, when there have been several iterations of the Day of Prayer for Peace in Assisi, some ordinary and others extraordinary, under three popes now, it's been the vision that's been the motor of, and sometimes described as the spirit of Assisi and of the World Day of Prayer for Peace. It was the time of the beginning of what would become Glasnost and Perestroika, the reform programs of Mikhail Gorbachev in the Soviet Union, but it was still, you know, the Cold War was on, and the threat of nuclear annihilation of all life in a massive and organized exchange between the Warsaw Pact and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization was a daily reality. It was the year of Chernobyl, the nuclear disaster in Ukraine, the effects of which we still feel today. It was a period of discovery, a rediscovery of the really awful things that human beings were capable of doing to each other in many areas of the world. Wars of liberation and revolution to shake off colonial oppression and to achieve national sovereignty and greatness in parts of the world that had been under the influence of one of the two major blocs, and sometimes they would fight each other by proxy in these places. I think it could be summed up by describing it as a climate of fear. The possibility of utter destruction was very real and quite palpable.
Then, of course, just a few years later, we saw the Balkans War erupt. And John Paul II, I believe, called another World Day of Prayer for Peace in Assisi.
This is 1993 now, and it's an extraordinary iteration of the World Day of Prayer for Peace in Assisi, specifically imploring Almighty God for an end to the scourge of war in the Balkans.
In 2002, Pope John Paul called this Day of Prayer for Peace in the aftermath of 9/11, the September 11th attacks of 2001.
Response to the September 11th terror attacks by the Islamic Al-Qaeda group on the Twin Towers in New York and the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and another plane that
went down
in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And in January of 2002, the internationally supported and recognized U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan had begun. The Al-Qaeda group, under the leadership of Osama bin Laden, had been hiding out in Afghanistan and received aid and succor from the Taliban group there. This is the historical context in which Pope St. John Paul II called together the leaders of world religions, great and small, once again to offer prayer for the gift of peace. And he did so certainly out of a sense of the importance of the symbolic power of this kind of gesture at a time in which there was a very great danger of genuine, full-scale civilizational conflict breaking out along religious lines.
And in fact, there was a talk of the clash of civilizations back then.
There's talk of that now. This isn't something that's gone away. But I don't think that we want to get wrapped up right now in the geopolitics of it and lose sight of the message and the genuine spirit of Assisi, which is always quite frank and unapologetic and unabashed when it comes to the challenges to peace and genuine crises that ultimately arise out of the wickedness of the human heart and the brokenness of human being. To which John Paul II was very, very clear, as have been his predecessors. There is only one cure, only one hope. He is Christ our Lord.
Vatican Radio's Chris Altieri. And now coming up in our next story, how generous and courageous nuns in Germany are opening their doors and their hearts to refugees coming across the border. Back in 2014, the Sisters of the Holy Redeemer in Würzburg, Germany, gave asylum to a family who had fled the war in Syria and had sought refuge in Europe. Through their 150-year-old ministry in the fields of healthcare and social work, the nuns were no strangers to suffering, but that family opened up a new window onto a world of unfathomable pain and loss from a conflict that has passed its fifth anniversary. With hundreds of thousands of migrants risking their lives at sea in the attempt to find safety in Europe, more and more refugees began arriving in Würzburg. Together with German authorities, the sisters set to work adapting their spacious convent into a shelter for needy families. Today, they host more than 100 refugees, mostly Syrians, whom they call their guests. So, when Pope Francis called on dioceses, parishes, and religious orders to express the gospel in concrete terms, by each taking in at least one family, the sisters were well ahead in the game. Petra Dankova, a postulant or nun in training with the Sisters of the Holy Redeemer, has worked for more than 8 years with refugees, mostly in Africa, and now helps the sisters in Würzburg. She talked to me about their work.
The biggest compliment I've heard for our work here was when one of our Syrian guests, and this was a Muslim man, so not even a Christian, he said even in Syria they heard about Pope Francis and his message of peace, and they always wondered about that, and when they're forced to come to Germany and ended up in what they could only describe as church, they said, now we see this message of Pope Francis lived out. Now we see that the sisters do what the Pope is telling people to do. It has brought a new life to the Mother House. It has brought a lot of volunteers to us who maybe previously would never think of coming to a convent but wanted to help with the refugees, and through that work have learned more about the sisters also. And it had, you know, brought this new ministry to the sisters who have traditionally been involved in healthcare and social services, and now have really listened to what is the current need and what is the most pressing need in the community right now. And I've seen that these refugees really come sometimes with just a plastic bag full of things and these incredible stories of loss. And I think it has really given a new meaning to this mission of healing that the sisters have been living for the past 150 years.
Could you tell us, I mean, it must be so difficult for the sisters, and there is so much need out there. How do they choose between who can come and stay with them and those who've got to remain in the tents? Do you have any stories to tell us? I know that you've had some babies born there.
So mercifully, the choices about who comes are actually not up to the sisters. I think they would find that to be a big burden. So the government assigns people to come to us simply because we are part of the official government system of emergency shelters. Having said that, I think the government have noticed that the sisters are really able to provide a little extra care and attention to people. And so many of the families who come to us have a special need, if you can imagine a Syrian family who's made this incredible journey overland, you know, along the Balkan route, walking many, many kilometers, many days or weeks with a little girl who has cancer, who is 6 years old and very seriously sick. And when they have come here and came into one of the regular shelters, the danger to this little girl was actually even bigger because of, you know, shared facilities, shared bathrooms, because oftentimes there's hundreds of people living in one gym all together. And so we really see people with special needs. We have had by now many babies born to women who came to us, who've made this incredible journey, pregnant or who might have even become pregnant on the way. And, you know, I think it really brought a new understanding for me to the message of Christmas when I saw right before Christmas a very young family come to us, a young woman who was barely 15, who was pregnant and delivered a baby just a few days before Christmas. And, you know, I can honestly say that I have seen the reality of what we sometimes forget, that Jesus also was born as a refugee to a very young mother on the way who maybe was looked down upon for, you know, being traveling so pregnant and being so young and having a baby. And, you know, when you see this newborn baby and see everyone around the baby light up and realize that despite everything that the mother has suffered, this is just such a precious gift for her to have this born baby in her arms. Those are all moments that are really transformational. And I have seen, you know, many of the volunteers and many of the sisters and many people who hear these stories to really come to realizations that These are stories of human struggle. It's not some sort of a physical phenomenon, you know, wave of refugees or invasion, even as we sometimes hear. But these are really people who have struggled and suffered incredibly and who call us to offer hospitality and welcome.
Germany, of course, led the push to give asylum to Syrian refugees, but it has since retreated from its promise to take in more. Other European countries are taking steps to build walls, close their borders to prevent them from coming. Mm-hmm. Do you think that these measures are warranted? Is Europe changing its very nature by saying no?
I think it's tragic that the European countries who really were at the forefront of putting in place this system of protecting refugees around the world, that these same European countries are now looking for ways to protect themselves from refugees. People say we have to protect ourselves from terrorists. I see babies being born in these camps on the Macedonian border or families with small children huddling in the rain. And I wonder if it's this rejection that is really a dangerous step towards making people feel like they're not worth anything. And that really brings them into the arms of recruiters and people who are looking for future terrorists. It just turns us away from this sense that we can be a community and do something for each other to this really base feeling of we have to protect ourselves in order to keep our good lives. We have to keep other people away, even if it's at the price of these people dying at our borders.
Have you seen some of these refugees leave the sisters to go on to find a real home, to be able to find a job, to rediscover their dignity?
A very clear example of this is a family who stayed with us in 2015. Even during the time, they just reached out and helped me with translating and help other people there, you know, when they needed accompaniment to doctors and so on. And this family now actually works for the sisters in this same house and has officially become assistants to the sisters to welcome people from their own country. And I had dinner with them, and it was wonderful to see them in their new apartment. You know, now they were offering me hospitality. They cooked a dinner for me and told their stories about how their little son is now enrolled in a kindergarten here and how he's learning German and what experiences they're making and how they're really learning their way in Germany, you know, from little things like finding their favorite foods in the supermarket, which might be in a different aisle than they're used to, you know, figuring out the German culture and you know, the rules of do you bring flowers when you go visit someone? Or and just these bigger things of really becoming a bridge between those people who are now freshly arriving from Syria and the German society to which they now more and more belong. And it's just really inspirational to see how much people want to make Germany their home, how much they want to learn the language and how much they want to understand this culture and be part of it.
Petra Dankova is a postulant or nun in training with the Sisters of the Holy Redeemer. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.